What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum that has a little bit of caffeine, L-theanine, and B vitamins in it. I really like to chew it all the time. If I'm, you know, driving around showing houses, making calls, when I'm going to the gym, sometimes I'll chew it as like a little pre-workout. Sometimes when I'm rolling jujitsu. Yeah, I am a big fan of NeuroGum. So get out there, try some NeuroGum.
And also shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. They make great products, stuff for beard care and beard health, and just they put out a lot of good information in terms of all of that. I mean, their stuff smells good and it's low ingredients, so it's definitely very organic and healthy for you. Like I always say, it makes your girlfriend want to kiss you. So check out Captain Beard Co. and check out some of the products that they have to offer.
All right, now to introduce our awesome guest today. He is a real estate investor, a real estate agent, right?
Yep.
Here in St. Louis, the great and powerful Bryson Duvall. Nice to meet you, man. Hey, yeah, we've been following each other for a long time. I'm glad we finally can. And we met at the coffee shop the other day for the first time, and it's about time. I've been talking about getting you on here for a while, so we're happy to have you.
Yeah, man, it's an honor. I think it's one of those things where I saw you, I felt like I like knew you already. I'm like, hey, there's Zach, even though we hadn't met in person. So I think it's been a long time coming, and I'm excited for what we dive into today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you and I were supposed to connect, and I felt bad because I was like, shit, this is the second time this is happening. Because the first time we were supposed to meet, I had a closing get moved up versus to when we were supposed to meet, and then one move back. So yeah, here we go. And I'm nice to finally get to sit down and chat with you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm a St. Louis kid. I guess I'm not a kid anymore, but I feel like, you know, that's like a badge of honor for people that are from St. Louis.
Are you getting some feedback in your microphone?
Yeah, a little.
Because I am too.
Is it me?
I don't know
what
I'm getting a little bit.
Yeah. Try moving your mic away from your.
Is that better?
I don't know.
Hello.
I don't know. I'm like, is it me?
Is it the AC?
I don't know. Fuck.
I did like move this though, so I don't know.
No, it's fine. You can touch it all if you want. Yeah, just try to like talk into it, I guess.
Is that better?
That sounds better. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. Maybe I'm just a little bit too far away.
Yeah, might be a little closer to it.
There we go. But anyway,
yeah, we'll cut that out.
Yeah, we can cut that out. But anyway, tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
Yeah, man. I'm born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. As you know, I'm a real estate investor. You know, I guess right now I am building a real estate team that includes brokerage services and actual investing in real estate. I started off as a wholesaler, strictly only doing wholesaling. I didn't think that there was like I would do anything else because I've made a lot of money really fast in my career. And I'm like, dude, this is like the end all be all. I just need to like, you know, wholesale
keep doing this.
400 deals a year, you know? So, you know, I think there was a nice transition into being like, cool. Okay. How can I use like my direct to seller acquisitions company? If people ask me like, what is Keys to Freedom, my company? I'm like, we have a direct to seller acquisition company, you know, real estate acquisition company. So, even though, like, all my listings will come from direct-to-seller leads at Keys to Freedom. So I renamed it. It started off as Freedom House Buyers. I renamed the company Keys to Freedom. And the name to me is, like, that's, like, the engine of where we can make impact through this company. We can get our, grow our personal wealth through this company. It is the Keys to Freedom from our clients and to our owners, well, owner being me, or anybody that is attached to my company, whether they work for us or as an agent in our sister company or the brokerage. So that's kind of where we are now. But, you know, it's been a long journey to get to where I am now. Like I said, I grew up in Central West End, moved out to, my parents bought a house in Ladue probably when I was 9, I think, going into third grade. So grew up in going to Ladue schools.
I was going to say, that's a big transition.
Yeah, it
West End of Ladue, right?
So I guess let me put some context on that. So even then, we had the DSEG program, like where cities kids could live in the city and still go to county schools if they met some type of, I think, academic criteria. I don't know if we like tested in to go there, but even when I went to when I lived in the Central West End, I was going to Ladue from kindergarten, so we were commuting. Essentially, my mom would drop me off at school before she went to work. And then, you know, we were getting older. My brother was getting closer to being of high school age and middle school. And we're like, you know, my dad was tired of living in a huge house that had three stories and all these stairs. His kind of health was, had some challenges, really not his health, but his knee and his leg was really bad. So like, you know, we had these huge T staircases that you got to go up and down all day to do anything in the house. So they bought a ranch in Ladue and we continue to go to Ladue. Then I went to SLU High. My brother went to SLU High. Then I went to SLU High and,
how old are you?
32.
Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah.
And at the same time then.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, most people think I'm like 24, 25. Yeah.
I was going to say mid to late 20s.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I get most of the time. So, yeah, went to SLU High. I was, you know, some would consider me a star soccer player.
Okay.
You know, my, yeah, it was interesting because SLU was a place where it's pretty hardcore discipline, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And I kind of knew that, you know, we had a family friend who was the assistant principal there. So I kind of already had an intro to what the culture would be like there, but yeah, I didn't realize how difficult it would be for me. And my brother's a lot more, what's the appropriate term? He's more straight-laced in the sense of he can, like, get down with parameters and rules and kind of just follow the path that's laid out for him. And I've been pretty unconventional my whole life, you know? So going to SLU High was like it felt like an attack on who I was.
Okay.
Really, you know? And it was okay because, like, on the surface, nobody would think anything's going on because I had good grades. I was playing soccer. You know, I eventually became, you know, captain of the soccer team. And, you know, we were really good at soccer during this time. And, but at the same time, it's like I never fully felt like I assimilated into the culture of SLU High, where a bunch of people, you know how it is. If you go to in any high school you go to in the St. Louis metro area, if you're good at sports, you're like automatically popular. Pretty much. I mean, that's been my experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like, it doesn't matter if you really do anything else outside of that. If you're good at something, they're like, cool. Like you're sitting by all the popular people at school and at lunch, all that stuff. So I'm sitting with the football team, all the other jocks. So, you know, on the surface that looked cool, but at the same time, like I never really hung out with SLU kids on the weekends because I was a partier, you know, and not to say that there wasn't SLU kids partying,
right.
But like I was like smoking a ton of weed. I was like drinking a ton and, you know, selling weed and doing just dumb shit pretty early on. Even that started probably when I was like 15.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I had a great family. My family's, I mean, have a great family, but you know, I was doing a lot of things that I definitely was not raised to do. I didn't see it in my household or anything like that. I think it was me just wanting to be different, me wanting to have some type of like control over something. I thought, you know, I immediately, when I started to smoke weed and I started to realize, I'm like, okay, I don't have any freaking like money to buy weed. And my dad especially is really old school in the sense of like, you know, like, cool, you don't have a job and you live in this house and you go to school, like, you don't need more than $5 in your pocket, like, at any time, you know? Right. Like, he's not wrong, but it was hard for me because now I live in Ladue. So, like, my friends, and this started even in middle school where, you know, when I'm going to the movie theater or something, I'm like, hey, Dad, like, could I get some money for the movie theater? My dad's like, cool, so the movie's $7.
Right.
You need to eat something, so here's $12.
Right.
You
know? Yeah.
When I go there, like, these kids have, like, their dad's Amex card.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, oh, shit, we're, like, fucking 12.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is different.
Right.
You know, you can just swipe that thing and buy whatever you want. Your parents.
Yeah. And you know how they are. They're like, oh, Bryson, don't worry about it. I'll just pay for it. And I'm just like, you know, that was cool, but it made me feel some type of way.
Right.
You know, so it was one of those things where it's very interesting and almost laughable now that I look back on my childhood, because when we moved to Ladue, I'm like, I mean, my dad's a dentist. He's always owned real estate. He's always, like, I thought was well off, but I'm like, I guess we're well off, mm-hmm. kind of, you know, but right. I'm like, when I'm around these people, I feel pretty fucking poor,
yeah.
you know, to be honest. So I think maybe that was a contributing factor to me being like, cool, like, I smoke weed. A lot of people smoke weed around me. This is a way where I can, like, get a little money on myself. I didn't have like, you know, grandiose dreams of being like Frank Lucas or anything like right. that, you know, at the time, at least.
Yeah.
I kind of grew into a little bit of that. But at the time, I'm like, cool, I can, like, pay for my own weed and stay out of the way and have a little pocket change,
right.
essentially. So that continued. And I always saw that as a side thing. My dream was to play college soccer. You know, I always was like, cool, if I could go and play professional soccer, that's great. But I really wanted to at least see, really just take it as far as I possibly could. Mm-hmm. I think I didn't really have any concrete goals on the end goal, but I knew I loved that. And that was the only, like, feeling of, like, you know, it was like that safe place for me to be on the soccer field.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I recognized very early, early on. I could silence everything else that was going through my head, and anything going on at home or any struggles that I'm going through can kind of, like, disappear. So, you know, that progressed, and I realized that I was pretty good at selling weed, and a ton of people wanted to buy weed.
So you selling weed to people at SLU, or?
A little bit, allegedly. And you know, I started to get introduced to a lot sketchier of a crowd because of that. Mm-hmm. Especially at 15. Like, I feel like even some of the friends that I hang out with, like, not all of them were smoking weed yet. So I started to be like, you know, who are the kids that are doing that the most often? And those were not the best people to be around at the time, or best influence on me. So, you know, as I continued to progress in soccer, you know, joined a better team. Now I'm, like, really, like, you know, getting looked at by colleges, but also, like, this underground drug business has, like, exploded, you know? So now at this time, like, I am regarded as one of the better soccer players in the area. But if you ask the crowd of, like, West County, I'm also regarded as, like, one of the biggest drug dealers in my area. I don't know what
right.
region you sure. would consider how big that would be, but in people's mind, at least. You know, when they thought of Bryson DeVall, those are the two things that comes in mind. Either somebody's going to be like, oh, he's a really good soccer player, or he's really cool, we party together. Or he's got the best weed. it was a strange thing. And I started to go to school where, you know, I was living a double life. You know, I go to school, captain of the soccer team, then I'd be like, all right, practice is done. How do I, like, make a ton of moves, make some money, and then, like, be home and be, like, normal around my family, yeah. you know? So that was exhausting for me. That was a really, like, you know, wild time. And it started to – it got so bad where I started to question, like, you know, how am I going to play Division I soccer and be a drug dealer?
Yeah.
You know, like, I was literally asking my question all the time, like, how am I going to make this work? Like, okay, maybe I can do this on the side. And this, it's like, and you know, it's crazy to look back at now, because at this time it's like, dude, I'm not telling this to anyone.
Right.
You know, this is all just in my head all day, you know.
I'm sure the mental toll that took was
tough. And I think I started, that was a period of time where I started to, like, party a lot harder. You know, so now I'm, like, drinking, I'm smoking, you know, like, I remember vividly my senior year and even my junior year, you know, big games. I know that they're, like, college coaches are there, and they're, like, I've already talked to them. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to the game. We got a big game tonight. We're in town, blah, blah, blah. And I'm, like, smoking a blunt, like, on my way to CBC.
Really?
You know? Like, yeah. Okay. Like, literally, like, it was such a wild time for me, because I just felt like it got to the point where it was like, dude, I never wanted to be fully sober. Really,
yeah.
You know, I smoked every single day before going to SLU High just so I could just be like, cool, I'll just, like, mellow out and just do my own thing, you know, and just be, like, high in the library, just, like, sitting, you know, just, like, doing nothing at school, you know,
right.
just not trying to be present there,
yeah.
you know, so I started, that's when, like, I really felt like it was a turning point where that led to actually, like, drug addiction, you know, I felt like anytime I had soccer in my life, I'm like, well, I wasn't like a drug addict then, really. But then my senior year, I got kicked out of SLU mid-soccer season.
Really?
What's the story there?
Oh, man. So there's a kid at school, and essentially I had agreed to bring him a gram of weed, like, to school. And we have a soccer game, so I'm leaving early. We're, like, taking a bus out to, like, I think we're playing Fort Zumwalt South. So we had it was my senior year, so my last period was, like, a free period at school. So we had a thing called the senior chill room. And I'm just sitting in there. I got my soccer jersey on. I got, like, captain armband, like, got my stuff ready to go to the game. And I only brought it on school premises is because I was leaving. I knew I didn't have a chance to go back to my car. I'm like, it's a grandma weed. Like, I'm just going to hand it to him at some point. I'm not even, like, thinking about anything like this. So I get my phone taken. So another student gets their phone taken, and they see all these, like, text messages of me talking about weed and, like, selling weed and all these different things. And he wasn't even involved in – he wasn't the kid that I was giving the weed to, mm-hmm. but it stirred up
enough,
what the fuck is going on? So I get called in there, and they're like, what do you have to tell me, all this stuff, my principal and my assistant principal. Then my senior year, I've known Brock Kesterson. He's still assistant principal at SLU High. I've known him since I've been, like, 5 years old going to SLU basketball camps. So, like, he's, like, devastated. Because he just, like, knows some sketchy shit is going on. And, you know, he's almost in tears because he also knows, like, my potential. He knows, like, you know, I was always in trouble at SLU High all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, ever since, like, my sophomore year, I was always in the principal's office. But most people love me because they're like, I mean, he gets, like, A's and B's. And
right.
He's good at soccer. And he's, like, nice. He's just a shithead.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't just, like, completely disrespectful. I was just kind of like... Yeah. I'm not listening to anybody.
Right,
you
right.
know, it's nothing personal. So
yeah.
I think I had that, like, not love-hate relationship, but, like, that, you know, where people were concerned about my well-being and my mm-hmm. future, right? And he was one of those people. And I could kind of see, like, the writing on the wall, how we started to talk about it. He's like, yeah, like, do you have anything in your locker? And I was just like, yeah, I do, you know? And my assistant soccer coach is the head of security.
Oh, wow.
So he comes in. He's like, you know, Charlie Clark, come to the office, blah, blah, blah. I'm, like, just, like, got my head down. And here, like, at this point, my assistant principal is, like, almost in tears. Because he's just, like, I can see his eyes kind of welling up. Like, this is not going to end well. Like,
yeah,
he's going to get kicked out of the school. Like, I already know how this is going to go. So we come, search my locker. They find that. I get arrested at school. They call in, like, the president. Everybody comes in the office. They're, like, meeting over here, and I'm just kind of, like, in here with the secretary. She knows my brother. She knows my whole family, and, you know, she's, like, consoling me because she's just like, yeah, this is pretty fucked up, you know. Like, I already know this is not going to be good. She's just being nice to me, and, you know, while everything else is, like, deliberating. And they're like, so the protocol, they come back in. Like, protocol in this situation is, if you are selling narcotics, any form of illicit substance on school property, we have to call the police. And, you know, at this point, like, you know, there's some director of diversity. He's a friend of, you know, friend of our family as well. Well, kind of just knows through my brother and has become a friend of our family, comes in and he's like, dude, like, there's no way you're going to fucking arrest somebody right now, are you? You know, and they're like, they're kind of like their hands are tied. So, mm-hmm. you know, a cop comes up there and the cop comes and he's just like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever done in my entire career.
No.
You know, like,
and just all you had on you was the gram?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So, you know, was just like, dude, you know, and the, you know, police officers, like, so hesitantly, like, coming up with handcuffs, like, I don't, like,
right.
I'm sorry that I have to be the one that does that, but could you turn around, buddy? Like, it's just a bit, and I'm, like, crying at this point. I'm just like, dude, this is so fucked, man. And, you know, so I have, like, this freaking perp walk out the like, front courtyard.
In handcuffs.
It's like a movie, dude.
Right.
Like, I look back and there's, like, kids, looking out of the window, and I can tell, like, teachers are trying to, like, shut the shutters so, like, it's not just a spectacle because mm-hmm. they kind of see what's going on. And obviously people were in, you know, in the window like, oh my God, it's Bryson DeVall going into a police car right now. It's the captain of our soccer team. We're
right.
Like, fuck. We're favorites to win state. We like just became like, I think we're like number three in the country, number one in post dispatch rankings and all that at that time. We're like, cool. All we got to do is like get to the state championship game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Obviously, I'm sure that wasn't going through their mind. At the right, time, right. But in my head, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck? I failed everybody, you know?
Right.
So this was, you know, and it's crazy. I told this, some of these details of this same story to a friend of mine that went to SLU High with me, came back in town and had a barbecue this summer, and he invited me and my girlfriend, and we were talking about somehow this came up, and I told this part of the story, these details, and neither of them knew that, and they were just like, oh, my God, this is like, this had to be such a tough time, because you know how things happen and you just kind of like block out some of the details of how they happened, you know? And so just for our own protection, you know,
right.
We don't want to relive that or like really have to admit how traumatizing it was, you know? And I think I got really good at that. Just, I think I get it a little bit from my dad of just being like, cool. Like you just like nut up and figure out the next move, you know? So, you know, I get picked up at police department, later that day. And, just so happens the, like the captain came over. I went to Sublette Station in South City, and the captain knew my dad somehow. I think he was one of his patients, actually, and he came over and had like this big like came in my cell and had like this like
talk
that dad moment talk or like, hey, like I know your dad, bro. Like you don't want to go down this road. Essentially, what he's basically saying, and I'm like, you know, and I was receptive. I was like, I appreciate you coming in here. And fast forward, like. You know, I vividly remember coming home and my dad being at home. My mom picked me up from the station. My dad was at home already. We got home and I remember coming in and sitting on the bed with my dad and my dad just being like, yeah, so, you know, I heard you had a tough day today. and this is the part of the story that I kind of forgot out of my memory. And my dad, like, you know, I love him so much, and he's come such a long way, even just in his journey of, like, being able to express himself, you know, after losing both of his parents. And I think just getting older, having grandkids and different things that he didn't have at the time. And, you know, he was just like, all right, cool. Like, we'll figure it out, you know. And I just, like, went to my room. And then the next day, we had to go back up to like officially figure out like if I'm expelled or not the next morning at SLU. So we figured out they're like, cool, like we're not expelling you. We're not going to have anything on your transcripts or anything, but like we're asking you to leave. You know what I mean? Like you need to transfer, you know? So, you know, they knew they weren't trying to tarnish anything. They knew it was a mistake, obviously. And they're like, hey, do you want to like go to DeSmet? You want to go to like Chaminade? And I'm like, fuck no, you know, like, I'm not like, like, that's like, they're like rivalry school. I'm not showing up and be like, can I hang out? I mean, and I hung
can
out
I
with
play
some
soccer?
SMAC kids, and I hung, you know how it is in St. Louis. Like we hang out with everyone kind of SLU kids, for hang out with the SMAC kids.
I hung out with all SLU kids in high school.
Yeah. So it wasn't a big deal. It was just like, I just can't do that right now. You know, I can't show up at their lunchroom. Like, hey guys, like, I'm like,
well, especially like how far into the senior year was this?
This is like
right soccer season, so it's like fall, beginning of year.
Yeah, this is like before, it was right before Halloween. So this is
so
like
you're
the thick
like,
of fall season.
Yeah, so you got to go like in for like half a year.
And I'm like, I guess I'm like, well, I'm definitely not trying to play soccer for them, but whatever, you know. So fast forward, we like literally left SLU High's office, went to Ladue and got enrolled like in an hour. And they were just like, all right, welcome. And I'm like around like, and I hung out with Ladue kids too, but it was just like one of those moments where like people are like, what the fuck is Bryson DeVall doing? Yeah. And they're, you know, like I sell weed to it. And well, at this time, I think I am like selling cocaine at this time a little bit too. And so, you know, I'm just like, all right, well, and it was one of those moments where you just kind of see the writing on the wall. Like, this is not going to be a good situation, you know, like even me at that age after all that, like, I'm like, this is not a healthy situation.
Yeah.
You know, I just knew that I didn't have the tools to like cope with this. And, you know, it just happened so fast. Like I was in handcuffs and then I was just a student at Ladue in literally like 36 hours, you know? And I was just like, what? I'm like in Ladue, like getting classes set up and I'm just walking around like, what is going on? on, dude. Like, and I have friends there. People are like, B, what's up? You know,
right?
They're like, cool, let's party, let's have fun, let's enjoy it. You know, all meaning well. They're not trying to like derail my life, but they're, you know, they want, they're happy to see me for sure. And I had known them since, some of those kids since kindergarten, you know, going through just Ladue public school or, you know, grade schools, middle schools. And, you know, slowly but surely, man, I just started to see my like life just completely unravel is what it felt like. You know, I just had no motivation. You know, I had the opportunity to play soccer for Ladue, and I was just like, dude, I just can't.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
I don't want to. I was just so depressed. I just didn't want to do anything.
So did you continue selling drugs or?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So.
And I'm guessing soccer at that point, future soccer was.
So at this time, I was verbally committed to play at Loyola Chicago
while
this is happening. You know, so I'm a junior. So haven't signed a letter of intent my senior year, and my my soccer Loyola Chicago coach talked to my mom. Just because the
signing day is in November, so this is like
right before
all that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think the signing day was in like January then or something. February, January.
I know when I signed mine, it was in November.
Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe you can sign her. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't know if different sports or different signing periods. I wasn't sure.
I could have swore a lot of people signed in January then, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But either way, it wasn't to then.
Right.
But that's probably why he's calling.
Right.
Like,
right.
So, you know, right, like, what's going on? And my mom kind of tells him, like, and even I tell him, like, the story, all this thing that happened. He's like, all right, sweet. Well, we still want you to play soccer here. He's like, you didn't get expelled. You made a mistake. He's like, dude, I'm sure, like, there's people on our soccer team right now that do the same shit.
Right.
He's like, dude, like, you sell weed, you smoke weed.
Yeah, you're an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah, like, it's not the worst thing around. You weren't caught with, like, a kilo or something.
Right, right.
Didn't get any charges, but...
So you didn't get any charges from the cops arrested you?
No, oh, that's nice. They didn't issue or anything. They're like, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, literally no citations or anything.
Right. They didn't even want to come up and arrest you.
Yeah. So, you know, he's like, your scholarship still stands. But, you know, me, I was just like, dude, I was depleted. I was spiritually just, like, fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, I had no motivation to do anything. I felt like, you know, my life was stripped from me, even though it was my own doing, you know. So that was like a turning point where I felt like, okay, like I've been battling this identity crisis of like, are you going to be like the schoolboy athlete? Or are you going to be like the drug dealer partier? Mm-hmm. Right. And this was a point where I was just like, I felt like I was like, cool. Like, yeah, you just need to like stop kidding yourself, dude. You're not like trying to be a soccer player and do all this shit in college and all that. So, dude, I did everything in my power to, like, erase that identity. I didn't know I was doing this, obviously, at the time.
Right.
I know this now.
Now, like, looking back on
it. Therapy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I did everything in my power to just swallow that pain and just be like, cool, like, how do we just stuff this far as far down as possible? And, you know, that was when I was, you know, this is when I was, like, selling cocaine at this time. And I was using cocaine as well, smoking weed every day.
You're still living at home, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm
you're
a senior.
High school.
But I'm like doing this like during the day. Like it's like bad now, you know? And I get back. And so that like kind of ends that semester. And I get back from, winter break. And my counselor's like, hey, bud, I just noticed something that when, like, your credit's fully, like, transferred over, like, you have less credit hours than what's needed because of your religion classes. And I'm like, well, I thought you guys would pick up on that when we sent over the transcript.
Right.
But I'm like, whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm just so, like, I'm like, okay, so what are you saying, bud?
Yeah.
You know? And he's like, so in order to graduate, you have to go to this place that it's called Collaborative Lab, CoLab for short. And what CoLab is, yeah, I mean, it's a shithole, dude. So it is it's a collaborative learning, like, school thing, and it's really purposed for kids that get, like, suspended for, like, 90 days at their school, they go there.
Gotcha.
So they're, like, not at home and they don't fail, you know?
Okay.
Or they get, you know, they're suspended for 6 months and they're, like, on the verge of expulsion. They're like, cool, you can still do credit hours and not be, like, around
fall behind
general population.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll take you out of gin pop is what it felt like, you know? So, I mean, these kids are, they're a bunch of them are nice kids, but they're lost.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it was crazy because it's like, yeah, I got kicked out of like October of SLU, and then like January, I'm in this fucking place, you know? And I was just like, dude.
So is this somewhere you go like after school or
no, it's like it is your school.
Oh.
So this is it's for Brentwood District, Kirkwood, Webster, I think Maplewood, and Richmond Heights.
Okay.
So all the kids, if you're in those in Ladue, if you're in those districts and that happens to you or you need accelerated credit hours, they just put you into this building and the teachers don't even fucking look up, dude. Mm-hmm. Like they literally give you a packet where like I was at SLU High, and I went back to, like, sixth grade, it felt like.
Mm.
Like, I'm like, oh, shit, this is, like, arithmetic, you know? Yeah. Like, okay, you know, I should be, like, in pre-calc right now. Yeah. Or something, you know, it was wild, bro, and it was just such a remedial academic situation.
So how long were you there for?
The rest of the semester.
Oh wow.
So the whole second semester of school.
The whole second semester.
So you were really only at Ladue for a couple months and then you got bumped
so,
there.
So I took like two, I think, electives. So I was up at Ladue maybe like 3 days a week, 4 days a week for like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go there and then go to co-op.
Yeah, go there, go to co-lab from like 9 to 12-ish, 12:30. Like all you do is work. That's why you can do it so fast because you're not like – it's like self-taught almost. It's just like you're just doing assignments, you know? You're not talking to the teacher.
Right. I mean, it's just I'm guessing it's like just real basic stuff just to get you the credit hours, so it's not anything advanced where you need stuff.
It's essentially like a step up from a GED.
Okay.
Like, cool, you're going to have a high school diploma from the state of Missouri after you're done.
Gotcha.
And you can get it from your high school. That's the only goal. Not like, oh, what's your college placement? You need to get into calculus. Oh, fuck no. Like, it's like, let's get these guys out of school, please. You know, is that? I mean, that's kind of what it is. And, you know, now I'm like selling weed to these kids.
I was going
to
say, this is where the entrepreneur mind came from, you know?
Yeah.
Hey. Dude, I come in there and I knew it was one thing where like I come up there and I'm the only one that drives there.
Okay.
That just put that into context.
Yeah,
I'm not saying like, you know, there's plenty of kids that don't have a car in high school, but I'm just saying, like, that's not where I'm from, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I guess that's what I mean. Like, I'm pulling up, I'm like, I think I'm in the parking lot. You know, I'm like, I think I'm in the right place. And then, like, buses come up, and the kids are getting off buses. I'm like, okay. So I start selling weed to them. And at this point, I'm just, like, demoralized, dude. I'm like, what the fuck is my existence, like, came to?
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not pretty much like for sure not playing college soccer, and now I'm at freaking CoLab, like hoping that I can get all these credit hours done so I can just freaking graduate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thank God I've like already had, you know, a decent ACT score and all that by that time. So, you know, I So this time, like, I am literally, you know, I'm probably buying and selling maybe, you know, maybe an ounce of cocaine a week. At this point, as I just turned 18 that February, so I'm just out here, dude. I'm just trying to make as much money as possible. I have no idea where I'm going to college yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, okay, shit, I kind of do need to figure out this college thing. Like, am I going to go to college or am I not going to go to college? I talked to a couple of my buddies. One went to CBC and other one went to Priory. And I'm like, I've hung out with them, like, ever since middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, dude, like, I'm going to University of Arizona, all this stuff. And we, like, hang out all the time. One of them I hung out with almost, like, every, you know, weekend day or so in high school. And I'm like, okay. Then my other buddy's like, yeah, dude, I think I'm going to go to U of A, too, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, huh. And I'm, like, kind of look into it. I'm like, this sounds pretty fucking cool, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, you know, I hear there's, like, great parties there. Me, I'm like, you know, I could probably, I hear they have, like, I was, like, interested in, like, either, like, finance or engineering at their time, and I'm like, you know, maybe this is, like, a way I can go and, like, kind of reinvent myself and all that stuff, and also make a shit ton of money. That was part of it. Like, I was like, dude, I'm going to make a ton of money at University of Arizona. I'm like, I hope maybe along the way I can get a degree. That's kind of how my mindset was at the time. I'm like, whatever. And really, I just wanted to run away from St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, if I can go somewhere far, I'm good with that. And, you know, so that's what I did. Got into there. We got a, an apartment together. And it was horrible, dude. It was just really? Such a bad idea. We're freshmen because all the dorms, like U of A is such a big school and high demand for public education that like the dorms fill up super quick. All that stuff happens. So we're freshmen. They're like, yeah, we don't have guaranteed housing for freshmen. Like you guys got to figure out your housing. And I was like, oh shit. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're like, let's get an apartment together.
Yeah, we're at Arizona.
Tucson.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, Tucson, really south, like an hour from the border. And so we go there, me and like some of my best friends from high school get an apartment that's like freaking 3 miles from the campus because everything else is like so expensive just, you know, completely filled up. They have like a shuttle that takes you to school every other hour or something like that. So we get there and like, dude, I went full force. I'm like, you know, I've always been able to sniff out good opportunities and like, I pride myself on being able to make things work almost anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's a skill that served me for sure. And I definitely learned that through that journey.
Well, and as an entrepreneur, that's something that you need. So
for sure.
And so, I mean, Murph talks about it all the time and a couple other ones. Oh, Matt. Joe,
yeah.
You know, some of the best entrepreneurs that he met started off as drug dealers.
Yeah. Yeah. And U of A is like, you know, I was around rich kids a lot of my life. Mm-hmm. And then there's like more rich kids at U of A, you know, that are like, sweet, like we need to buy drugs. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, our parents' money to spend on drugs.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm
like, awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I always know where to find drugs. You know? Perfect. You know, so
we're a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
Right. So I you know, I was able to get, you know, supplier out there, you know, develop a little network and associates out there to help me with all that. And I was first semester I was like decently good at school. I was going to class most days and, you know, then I think my second semester of my freshman year, I was introduced to Percocets. And man, oh man, that's like
slippery slope with those opioids.
It felt like, man, is like all that pain that I was going through at the time was like temporarily erased, is what it felt like. I was like, oh my God, dude. Like in hindsight, it was one of those things where like, I knew I was in trouble before it even started, you know, just the way it made me feel and just knowing my personality, you know, I was like, oh my God, like, where has this been my whole life?
Mm-hmm.
Like I've been wasting my time with fucking powder cocaine and marijuana and, you know, like that's what I felt like. It was like somebody was there to like solve my problems is what it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I slowly started to seep into that and more regular use of opiates and, I'd say that I was addicted to Percocets probably by that spring of my freshman year.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't, like, committed to being a drug addict yet, but I was definitely physically addicted to them. And then I came back, thank God I had a little bit of break from that when I came back from St. Louis over the summer. I was kind of just, like, struggling because I'm like, shit, I'm like literally dope sick.
You know?
Like there's no, I had no like supplier in St. Louis for that and somehow kind of made it through the summer. You know, came back to U of A and, you know, at this point, like, you know, I'm you know, we're taking trips to California, we're doing like, you know, buying, you know, $30,000 to $50,000 worth of weed at a time now.
Oh wow.
And you know, we're doing a lot and I'm spending a ton of money. You know, it got to the point of my sophomore year, you know, I'm probably spending, I don't know, $700 a month or a week on Percocets.
Mm. Wow.
And, you know, really having to sell a ton of shit just to like keep up with my habit now, you know, and I'm just all over the place. I get into it with a young lady down there over drugs, let's just say, and, you know, some words are exchanged, and all of a sudden I have, like, a beef with this gang.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Dude, and you know where you, like, you get, like, a warning from something, but you're just like, dude, like, not me type of thing.
Right.
You know, like, so.
Sure.
So this guy, like, calls and threatens me and everything, and I'm just like, dude, Like, all I think I called her out of her name for sure. And I still to this day know that I was right in this situation. Not to call her out of her name, but my stance on the disagreement. Mm-hmm. I stand on that. They didn't see it that way. And, you know, now people are looking for me at my apartment complex. And our apartment complex is, like, full of, like, rich kids from the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Like, there's, like, Range Rover Sports. Like, yeah. You know, like, the car lot's, like, crazy for 18-year-olds at this time. Like, I'm like, what the fuck?
Little apartment complex?
Yeah, it's like, who works there? It's, like, young professionals. Like, no, it's, like, 18 to 20-year-olds. So these guys come start to ask about me places. And people are like, dude, like, these crazy-looking motherfuckers are asking for Bryson Duvall and all this. So, you know, one day I'm in my apartment and my buddy and his dog are there, and middle of the afternoon, maybe 2 p.m. on like a Tuesday or something, like middle of the week. And these guys end up kicking my door in, and, you know, one of them has a sawed off shotgun type of gun. Another guy has a pistol, and they come in just waving shit.
Two dudes?
Two guys. And, you know, I run to the back, and he lets off one shot, like, towards that direction. I don't know if he was, like, trying to hit the dog or whatever. The dog kind of stopped there to, like, protect us. So, you know, end up surviving that. And, you know,
rob you?
I didn't have anything there, really, you know. I had a safe there, but, you know, nothing really got taken. I think they took my cell phone that was on the table. So, after that, you know, I, like, stayed in a hotel for a while, and, you know, these guys kept on coming back to the apartment complex. People would call me and be like, yeah, those dudes are back. Like, I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I don't know if the situation
is that
serious.
So all just from you said something,
you know,
to that one lady?
All I did. You know, I didn't realize how well connected that this young lady was. So, you know, that was kind of where I was like, okay, dude, I'm, like, constantly looking over my shoulder. I'm like, yeah, I think my time is up in Arizona. Mm-hmm. You know, like, me, if you ask anybody that knows me, grew up with me, like, dude, I've always loved to make money. I've loved, like, that hustle and lifestyle of, you know, partying hard and living fast, but I'm not a fucking tough guy, dude. I'm not, like, I'm not trying to fight. I'm not even trying to fight anyone. Like, right. I don't fucking, like, shoot someone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, my time's up. I think St. Louis is calling my name. You know? Yeah. And I, like, called my mom, and she's like, "What the fuck?" Yeah.
Did you tell them about the whole thing? Or
no, I told my mom. I told my mom that I was in trouble and all this stuff happened. And my mom and my dad have had some knowledge of my dealings for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, especially my mom, and my mom was always kind of like a thing where, like, you know, she's going to, like, pray for me and try to, like, kind of, like, I think both my parents realized that, like, if they wanted me to be in their life, they kind of thought they had to let me do my thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my dad, I remember he found out I was selling weed. I think even it might have been before I got kicked out of SLU. I think it was my junior year. And I don't know, he, like, looked at my phone. Something happened, and he found out, and he asked me straight up, and I just told him, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, he asked me, he's like, is this what you're doing? I was like, yeah. And he was like, dude, like, first of all, don't bring this, like, into my household. And he just kind of had that man-to-man talk. He's like, dude, if, like, police get involved in this shit, there's only so much I can do to protect you.
Right.
You know, and he's like, you understand, like, what roads this lead to? And I was like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was pissed, but he wasn't like, you're no longer selling drugs.
Sure.
Right.
You know, because he's also like, dude, I mean, I go to work every day. I don't know what the fuck you're going to do, you know?
Right.
Like, right. I can only have,
like,
so much control.
Yeah, like, I think just for his own safety, too, he's like, I can't obsess over it all day. So I came back to St. Louis, man, and, you know, I ended up walking onto UMSL's soccer team for a little while. Then I realized they, NCAA, like, went through all my transcripts, and I had, like, a 0.8 GPA, and they're like, dude, you can't, like,
boy,
you can't play right now. So that was another kind of devastating. I don't know, for some reason I thought I'd be, like, eligible somehow. And I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. I really didn't go to class much.
No. You
know? And they were like, yeah, you can come out to the team next year. And I was just like, I don't want to wait a year. I'll just, like, get my education, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that led to me kind of – I was still partying a little bit. I wasn't, like, doing opiates at the time. I was still selling weed and smoking weed for sure. And, you know, then I time kind of went past. I met up with an old buddy from high school, and, you know, that was the day I was introduced to heroin. And that just, that was another moment that I knew I was in trouble again. I was like, holy shit, you know, because I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
It's got to be similar to the Percocets, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was times like the, 10.
Yeah, like, it's like, yeah, that was like the father, you sure. know, I felt like I was kind of functioning and using it quite regularly before I turned into a daily user. And, you know, maybe probably like 6 months into it, I started to use every single day. I was also like, you know, an intern for Northwestern Mutual at the time. Mm. So, dude, it was, bro. Like, this was like, this is wild shit, bro. Like, I would go into, it got to so bad, like, I would go into these, they would have like these intern sales meetings, right? And I would come in like, suited up, like, sharp as fuck. Like, dude, I was out of my fucking mind, dude. Like, I thought this was, like, all, like, a movie I was in, dude. Like, I'm, like a character. Like, gotta put my suit on, yeah. Do this. Gotta make sure I get to the dope dealer at some point today. I'm, like, gotta meet him to sell some powder. Then I'm, like, oh, I got, like, an actual meeting with, like, a business owner that I've, like, set up through somehow with my network to sell insurance, bro. Like, it was wild, bro. Then I'm, like, oh,
shit.
So,
were you selling heroin as well? Or
no,
just,
no,
just, okay, just, no. Just using.
Just using. And then I'm also like, got to go back to class. So it's like every day is like, dude, I'm fucking
just,
grinding,
wow.
Bro.
Like, yeah, sounds like it.
7 a.m. I'm like, all right, shit. All right, we got, I'm like juggling so much. I got a girlfriend at the time. And I'm like, dude, it was just such a, every day was so long,
yeah.
Bro. Like just juggling all that. And, you know, eventually that kind of took over where, you know, I was failing out of UMSL. I failed out of UMSL, I think. I started UMSL for the first time in 2012, ended up getting my degree in 2019.
Okay.
So I failed out of UMSL, I think, 3 separate times. Mm. Eventually, I got into some legal trouble. I left the scene of an accident, one-person accident, like nobody was involved. But I left the car there, did a ton of fucking property damage, and, you know, was on felony probation for that. And then I went to rehab, I think, a couple times after probation, and I had a little bit of, like, I wouldn't even say clean time. I was still, like, smoking weed, but I wasn't on heroin for a little while. You know, got back onto that full force, and, you know, I was using even when I was on probation. So I have felony probation. And
from the accident.
From the accident. And, you know, I dropped my first time dropping dirty. I tested positive for 4 different substances. Mm. My probation officer, Xanax, I think PCP, marijuana, and heroin, or, you know, opiates. And, you know, my PO was super patient with me. You know, he could tell that I had a ton of potential as well. And, you know, I dropped dirty a couple other times before he made me go to rehab. And, I mean, Mandy was like, either...
Was that kind of the breaking point right then? Or
it was not.
No?
What, I wish it was.
Yeah, what was that? What was that breaking point for you that finally was like, shit?
So I ended up catching another case. So I went to rehab. He sent me to rehab, and then in that next like 4 months, I went to rehab like 4 times.
So how long is rehab?
These were 30-day treatments.
30-day treatments,
you know. But I was like,
in the facility.
Yeah, in the inpatient. So once I got kicked out of using, I got kicked out for using in a treatment center.
Mm.
I was also selling drugs in the treatment center, not to people in the treatment center. I'm not completely a scumbag, you know.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I was like, damn, taking well, advantage outside, of an opportunity.
Yeah,
you know,
no, I was gonna say, he said he notices opportunities.
No, and, no. We all have to have some code at the end of the day for sure, no matter how bad it is. At least
gotta be shooting
like
a fish,
so.
Fish in a barrel in there.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, come on now. Like, I'm not just a complete demon at this time, right? So, so I go to treatment, get kicked out. For dropping dirty in there, like, you're using in here, dude, get the fuck out. And they let me back in, and I get kicked out again for using. And I go back to my probation officer and he's like, dude, like, do you just want to go to prison or what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know? And he's like, cool. Like, I'll give you one and only one other opportunity to get clean. So we go into a treatment center. This is like a, I mean, it's like a psych ward, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, they call it a treatment center, but that's exactly what it is. It's in a psych ward building, and it's
where's this at?
It's in like Del Mar and Union in the city. Mm-hmm. And you know, a couple of days in there, my mom called. Like, you have to get you have a jail phone call, 10-minute phone call, mm-hmm. and I call my mom. I'm like, I mean, it's the only person like I'm talking to at this point in my life, and I'm. First phone call since I get there, my mom's like, I got some bad news. The task force just left our house and, you know, they raided the house and, you know, they found your stuff, essentially. So during this time of like, you know, I had a girlfriend at the time. I'm living in a condo in Creve Coeur. But during all this, like, legal trouble and stuff, I moved back in, you know, obviously the relationship is fucked at this time. Mm-hmm. And so like I need to see, like, have a safe, stable place for probation and like a place to report to and everything. So I'm living with my parents in like the meantime of all this stuff happening. And, you know, so I allegedly had some product there and they found that. And, you know, that was, you know, around like 6 ounces of powder cocaine, and I'm in treatment, mm-hmm. and my parents are getting raided by the mm-hmm. task force. So, yeah, and this is one of those moments where it's like, holy shit, what have I done, dude? You know, like, there's like, yeah, people said that there. I think my dad was like, yeah, it was like at least, you know, 10 to 12 vehicles.
Oh, wow.
On our street, and they live in Ladue, bro. You can imagine how fucked this is.
Right,
you
know, right. Like,
what's the Duvall family up to, you know, like, all this. So, you know, I get out of that. So that officially violated my probation, right, that I was already on. So I leave treatment, get out of treatment, go to my PO's office, get arrested at my PO's office for the probation violation. Didn't get out of county jail until, like, 8 months after that.
Okay.
So I had a blessing, and my PO really saved me on this and recommended that I needed sufficient drug treatment and not, like, so much focus on being, like, a drug dealer, mm-hmm. essentially. So they, instead of issuing on my new drug charge, they allowed me to complete a drug rehab program inside of county jail while I was there. And the conditions were they would not issue on my possession and distribution case if I stayed clean and went to, like, all these meetings and all this aftercare stuff for, like, a year after I got out of county jail. So that was the conditions of my deal. And so, I mean, it was, like, a sweetheart deal. Mm, yeah. I mean, like, it doesn't get better than that. So, you know, I get out of county jail, and I'm good, but, you know.
So you're in there for 8 months?
Yeah, I think 7.5 months.
How was that?
Dude, it was not bad.
Really?
I mean, this isn't prison. This is county jail in Clayton, and so I'm not around, like, killers all day. The most people on my floor are, like, there's some people in there for some younger kids for, like, first-degree assaults, but for the most part, it's, like, theft.
Drugs.
Yeah, drug possessions, some distribution, child support, all the DWI stuff like that. So not too much violence on there that I saw, you know.
Sure.
I felt safe pretty much. So
that's good.
Honestly, it was cool because, dude, I felt like I hadn't, like, slept in, like, years. You know, I was like, oh my God, like, it's pretty freaking peaceful.
Got nowhere to go.
Yeah, like,
got nowhere to be.
In my cell reading, like, it was the most peace that I've experienced in such a long time.
What time frame is this?
This was in 2015.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I eventually got out. You know, I was good for a while, and then I ended up using again. I started what was really hard for me was not just, like, getting out and being like, I'm not going to do heroin. It was hard for me to, like, give up the lifestyle.
Mm.
You know, like, mm-hmm. I'm like, who is Bryson DeVall if I just, like, you know, like, just go to work?
Right.
And just, yeah. You know,
reshaping,
like,
that image of yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that was the hardest part. It wasn't just like I got out and I'm like, oh, I'm fiending for drugs.
Yeah.
That's not how it happened. It was like, dude, I feel lost. I feel like this isn't me. Like, what is me? Mm-hmm. You know, how do I define who Bryson is now?
Yeah.
You know?
And who is that? Who's Bryson now?
Ah, that's a good question. Now, man, I'm an advocate for personal development, for recovery, for, I like to see myself, you know, a brand or hashtag for me is Chain Breakers. That's something that came up from a real estate coaching thing that I did. And it's like what I stand for. You know, I have learned so much about being open about who I am and where I've been and what I'm struggling with now and what I have struggled with. And, you know, I look at myself as a voice for people that don't have a voice. Mm-hmm. I look at myself as someone that is an inspiration to give somebody the permission to be who they want to be.
Yeah. And how long from that time period where, you know, you're coming out of prison coming out of jail and feeling lost until you found that purpose and that drive?
I'd say a few years.
Yeah.
You know, so I struggled that summer. Like, I ended up overdosing.
Oh, man.
That was actually the first time I overdosed, actually after I got out of it. Had a fentanyl overdose.
Oh, man.
And was in the bathroom. Thank God I wasn't alone and, you know, got to the hospital. Saved my life, dude. So after that, I got clean, like, maybe 2 months after that.
After the overdose?
Yeah, after the overdose. And
this is still 2015 time?
2016.
Now.
Yeah. So that's when I started my recovery journey that November of 2016. And, you know, even then it was hard for me because now I, like, am going to meetings. I'm doing all these things.
You're committed to actually, you've been going to rehab for years, but this time you're actually like, fucking, I'm doing it for real this time.
Yeah, and that was scary in itself because I still was struggling with,
your identity, probably.
Yeah, dude. You know? Like, I just didn't know. I don't know. It's one of those things where you don't. I didn't know who I would be if I wasn't selling drugs, or using drugs. You know. Mm-hmm. So years went by. I got back into school. You know, had some recovery time under my belt. And, you know, I started to flip cell phones, and that was fun as shit. I started to realize, like, dude, if I don't have something that is like a challenge or a something, like school and a regular job, it's just like, was just not enough. Mm. You know, I'm like, dude, this sucks, bro. Like, I would just walk the halls of school and see, like, kids that were younger than me, like, yeah, I'm, like, going to go interview for Boeing. And I'm like, that's fucking awesome, you know, but I'm like, what the fuck do I do?
Right.
You know? Like, were you working somewhere at this time? Or?
I'm working for my dad.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a dentist, but has an oral health foundation. So I'm doing like admin work, helping him do some event stuff and all that. And I'm just like, you know, I'm like, should I just like advance in his company? Or, you know, I just felt like, dude, I'm like I had some confidence because I was building some having acts of self-love that was helping my confidence. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started flipping cell phones in college. I made 40K. That's like one of my awesome accomplishments from college. I made $40,000 net profit. Half of the time, I didn't even have a license. My license was revoked from that accident. Was like having people meet me at my like job in random places to buy their phones and sell them on eBay, repair their phones and flip them. So. Mm. Then I got introduced to my buddy, shout out to David Dodge. I don't know if you guys know David Dodge in our market, South County guy. I think he went to Lindbergh, owns a company called Household Easy. And he, put me on to real estate.
Okay.
You know, David was he's a guy that, you know, has had his past as well.
Mm.
And I related to him a little bit of like, okay, shit, he can just like make some shit shake from nothing. And, you know, I saw him talking about flipping properties with no money, like, back in 2017. And that was before, like, I feel like that was, like, a official, like, clickbait then. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, everybody says like, that.
Yeah.
Who, yeah.
Don't use your own money.
Yeah, even my grandma, you know, even, like, you know, my great uncle's, like, heard that, like, sales pitch you know, as he's, like, not even on the internet, right?
Yeah.
But at this time, I'm like, well, no, like, what the hell is he talking about, you know? So... I call him. He's like, yeah, dude, I'll show you how to wholesale real estate. Here's my free course. Like, haven't seen you in a couple years. We used to be in similar social circles. And he's like, come to my office and I'll get you on a dialer and get you started. And I'm like, say less. And I don't have a license at this time. So, like, my mom drops me off in Brentwood. I'm with my parents again. And, you know, I start sourcing deals from him. I did a deal off of a Craigslist lead with him and made, like, $600 in like 2 weeks, and I was like, "Oh shit, dude,
cool."
You know, I'm like, "I make it takes me a long time to make $600 in my job now,
right?"
You know, so that was when I was like, "Okay, like I got to make real estate work," you know, because I knew that I just knew graduating from college and going to one of these companies that most people go to in St. Louis was just like not my path. Also, I had a felony conviction, so I'm like, I don't know if that helps at all either.
Right.
You know, to be fair.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think just finding that was just like, all right, cool. Like I felt like I was in control again of, and I think that's what all of that stuff was doing. Drugs, you know, addiction, selling drugs was having that type of, illusion of control over my feelings, control of like my day, control of my money and outcomes and different things. That's that feeling of power. And now I think I'm able to source that in a better way.
Makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so that was kind of a turning point where I'm like, cool, I got something that I can like kind of obsess about a little bit and build something with it.
That's awesome.
Dude, yeah.
That's an incredible story, man.
Yeah, man. That's quite the story. Yeah. Quite the life, man. Yeah. Yeah. And congratulations too on being able to get through that, because a lot of people don't, like a lot of people can't get past that. And you said something about it being about identity. Do you think a lot of people that have addiction, and like, do you think that's kind of where that comes from, is an identity crisis, or is it actually being addicted to the drugs?
It's a drug, as we say in the recovery world, drugs are only a symptom of our disease.
Okay.
You know, and what that means is like that's an outward manifestation of addiction.
Okay.
You know, so like addiction a lot of times is like, you know, comes from insecurities of our childhood, things, you know, I know that when I was even younger, you know, I did, you know, struggle with not having things my way, not having, you know, people answer when I call, you know, this like a lot of self-centeredness at the, you know, at the core of any addiction is self-centeredness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's what I truly believe, you know, self-obsession, self-centeredness is the core of our disease. And I think, you know, really people, you know, my belief in some recovery literature will say that, you know, when it comes to using, it's like people are just not able to live life on life's terms without using something.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, that's gambling. Mm-hmm. You know, some people, that's sex. Mm-hmm. Some people, that's crack cocaine. Mm-hmm. Some people, that's heroin, whatever that manifests to. Some people, it's just money.
Right.
You know? So everything's an addiction because we just can't sit with our feelings. We can't just be Bryson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't just sit and just say, I'm here.
Right.
And I accept who I am today, and I can just live with that without changing the way I feel about it.
Mm.
You know, so
gotcha.
I think.
Okay.
So when it comes, I mean, that I think identity is tapped into it and just all about how our level of acceptance of really who we are.
That makes complete sense.
Yeah. If that, I know that was absolutely around a way.
Yeah, no, that's great.
And I didn't, you know, that's not my standard answer. I think I was just thinking through it.
That was great.
It comes from that lack of acceptance, you know, to truly, because if we all think about the people that like have the most self-acceptance and self-love for themselves, they would never put something like that in their body.
Right. Right. No, that makes 100% sense. Yeah. So.
For sure.
Anything else you want to pitch while we got you, you know, before we wrap things up?
Dude, I got nothing to pitch.
No?
I got nothing to pitch. My only pitch is just like, you know, all these things that, you know, I talk about. My buddy asked me when he did a podcast not too long ago, like, you know, what's a message that I want to leave to people? Yeah. And I think the biggest message is that, like, we all have the freedom. If we wake up today, we all have the freedom to change and redefine who we are at any waking moment, you know, And people used to tell me that all the time in my, still do in my recovery journey. It's like, cool. Like, you know, I would do some step work and talk about like some of my defects and somebody would be like, yeah, you don't have to be that way, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just so simple of being like, we just don't though.
Right.
You know, like if there's something, there's so much that is in our power to change and redefine, mm-hmm. you know? So I think if anybody looks at my story, sees anything that I post, I think that's the biggest reminder and message that I always want to leave with.
That's awesome. Well, that kind of segues into our last part of this here. We like to play a little game at the end of the show. It's called one last question. It's called the Tombstone Game.
Okay.
Here lies Bryson. What's it say on your tombstone?
Oh, man.
Take a second to think about it if you need it. Mm.
That's a great question.
It's one of my favorites. Hmm. It could be a quote, be a saying, how you want to be remembered.
Yeah, I don't know if there's specific words that come to my mind. I think is being remembered of by just giving it his all to a worthy cause. Mm-hmm. I think for me, I want people to remember how I made them feel, how they've been inspired by me. Having a legacy of service. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So legacy of service and inspired life. That's pretty good, man.
Sure. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. It was great to hear your story. Yeah. Going from where you came from to where you are now, man, that's incredible.
Yeah,
it's pretty incredible. So
amazing. That was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. But
absolutely.
Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in. Make sure if you haven't subscribed yet, please click that subscribe button for us. Hit that like button. Comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.
Love it.
Sweet.
Awesome. That was great, dude. That
Thanks
was fucking awesome.
On,
absolutely.
Hell of a story,
absolutely.
Man. Hell of a life.
Yeah.
And I look forward to seeing where it continues to go, man.
Yes. Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, dude, anytime that thing kicks on.
You can hear it.
Yeah. So we're going to figure something out, figure that out.
Yeah, it did come on a couple
it
times.
Like twice.
Yeah, it was at the beginning.
Beginning and the end.
Yeah.